Hello, and welcome to Viewpoints, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. Braille embossers and refreshable displays are pretty commonplace these days, but it wasn't always that way. This week on Viewpoints, we'll be talking with Tony and Kate Schenk from Enabling Technologies about the development of these devices and some of their current products.
But first, to our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Tony Schenk.
When you have seen settings where you have very bright, productive people, if they just had the tools that gave them the access they needed, you know, it lets them become just as productive as anyone else who might apply for a certain situation.
And that's why some of these Braille embossers and refreshable displays are so important for people these days, and they've opened up many opportunities for blind people to be at parity with their sighted colleagues in the workplace.
Including you.
Including me, yeah. Xerox was always very good to me in terms of being able to buy me the types of equipment that I needed to do my job. I mean, Braille displays and embossers can be pretty expensive things, but as I needed these things to do my job more efficiently and effectively, Xerox was always providing those for me.
Now in the United States, we have the Americans with Disabilities Act that makes it the law that employers need to provide what tools their employees need. But that wasn't always the case either. And Pete was lucky that Xerox did that before the law was passed.
And the other thing we'll see is decades ago, some of these tools didn't even exist. Tony will walk us through some of the history of this before we had Braille embossers and refreshable displays, and these things just weren't available.
Turning now to our low-tech item, we'll meet Tony and Kate Schenk. Well, how we met them was actually kind of humorous.
We were actually on vacation in Seattle for a couple of weeks and staying at a hotel where they offered a happy hour in the evening. And we walked out onto the patio there, and what happened?
Well, we started chatting with Tony and Kate, and they, you know, Pete's one of these guys who people are always saying, like, they think it's a compliment. Well, you don't look blind. But to people who are familiar with blind people, he does exhibit certain cues that people pick up on. And so Kate noticed and assumed that we were in town for the same conference they were in town. And we started chatting. And when it turned out that we ran a radio program and they ran a company that makes Braille embossers, we started talking. And after a couple of minutes, I said, listen, don't keep going because then you'll just have to repeat everything. I'm going to go off and get our recorder. And if you don't mind, we'll record our discussion with you for an episode of Viewpoints. And here's that episode.
Can you introduce yourself?
I'm Kate Schenk from Enabling Technologies.
And what's your role there?
I'm a product manager for domestic, and I go to a lot of different conferences to show our embossers, the Romeo and the Juliet, all the most popular, and our new one is the Phoenix, which is the first graphic and Braille embosser that can do good standard Braille and graphics at 25 dots per inch.
And you?
Oh, I'm Tony Schenk. I'm the president of Enabling Technologies, and I've been designing and manufacturing Braille production equipment for over 30 years now.
And we'll be talking with more people that we met at the conference later on, but for this show, we'll be focusing on Enabling Technologies and how Braille embossers and refreshable displays were developed through the years.
And I guess we haven't mentioned what that conference was. It was the International Conference of the Association for Education and Rehabilitation of the Blind and Visually Impaired. And this conference happens every 2 years, and it's huge, and lots of people come for the seminars, and we kind of crashed the exhibition hall and got to talk with a lot of vendors, and that was fascinating. Tony and Kate have been involved in making Braille embossers for a really long time.
How did you guys get into the field of making Braille embossers? That's not kind of typical.
Well, Tony actually started the company as an engineer before I met him, and he needed a job. he was working with Sperry in Phoenix and came and helped his family who wanted to start a business and became an engineer for Triformations back in 82. And I met him in 83. And strange story, but I met him in tights.
Which one of you?
He was, actually. We were at a Renaissance Festival, and he was dancing, and they hired me. I was a dancer. I was actually a professional ballet dancer, and I had a Renaissance company, and he hired us, and we met then.
He hired you to dance, or he hired you to work at the company?
He hired us to dance, my company. It was a guild.
Oh, okay.
I was a dancer, didn't know anything about Braille. I started with the company 15 years ago, so I started quite a bit later after we were married. It was a good company to work with. When he became the CEO, he was very good with his employees, and I'm like, nice company to work with. And he has exceptional employees, and they have been around for a very long time. I would say the average age is 15 to 20 years that they have been with the company. We have about 38 employees, and they actually really care about the work. And that makes a big difference, and people see it. Mm-hmm. And they see it in the embossers because they last long, and we take care of people. We think about who they are.
You never know where you're going to meet an interesting contact, be it in tights at a Renaissance fair or happy hour in Seattle.
Well, and as a coincidence, you and I met dancing also, but it was traditional American country dancing, not quite as historical as what you do at a Renaissance festival.
You are listening to Viewpoints.
In this week's focus topic, we'll talk with Tony and Kate Schenk about the state of technology for Braille embossers and displays when they first got involved years ago and how that's evolved.
The corporation actually started in 1971, and enabling at the time was called Triformation Systems. The original founding people in the company produced the first commercially available Braille embosser, as a matter of fact. They worked with people at MIT who had done some prototypical machinery, and they had a blind colleague, and some of the founders worked at RCA, actually, and they modified a teletype machine that had a paper tape punch on it, and they modified that punch to actually emboss Braille on a strip of paper tape, much like the old-fashioned ticker tape machines. And that kind of generated a lot of interest, because at the time, the only way to produce Braille was either with a Slayton stylus or a Perkins Brailler or something similar, which was a Braille typewriter type device. And there weren't really any automated ways of producing Braille. And they came up with a way to do that. And the early devices were really used more like terminal devices to a mainframe computer. And a lot of the early users were programmers. But that gave them the incentive to go out and find some venture capitalists, start the company, and after that they actually produced the LED 120, which was a really high-performance Braille terminal, so to speak. But it could also be used to make Braille books, magazines, things like that. Primarily it was used as a terminal device to a mainframe computer system, and that allowed a lot of blind individuals to then have a career opportunity being programmers, you know, and they would use these devices to use the mainframes just like a sighted person might do, you know, with a video terminal or a print output device like a teletype.
We were excited to discover upon reading Enabling Technologies website where they describe their history that this early Braille device was actually created in our hometown of Rochester, New York. At about the same time, a friend of ours realized that Pete could have benefited from a refreshable Braille device, and he started thinking really hard about making a refreshable Braille device starting with a single cell.
Yeah, he had some interesting ideas. One was we were using thermal printheads at the time, that printheads that heated up a little resistor to make a hot spot and then boil or melt some ink. And he thought, wow, maybe we could heat up something to have Pete, you know, touch a Braille symbol. Well, you know, if I didn't touch it hard enough, I couldn't feel the heat. If I touched a little bit too hard, it burned. So that wasn't such a great idea. But fortunately, other people were being more successful working on these things at the time.
Well, Dale talked a lot about using piezoelectrics. I don't know if he ever actually built a prototype cell, did he?
No, I don't think he did. We were all working at Xerox at the time, and we really had other jobs to be doing. This was kind of a side little interest because, you know, we had the blind person in the group, i.e. me.
Talking to Tony and Kate and thinking about Dale got us wondering what their involvement might have been with refreshable Braille displays in addition to embossers.
So were these single-use Braille embossers or were they refreshable?
Well, at the time, Triformation Systems had actually taken on the rights to produce one of the first paperless Braille devices. Telesensory, as you may know, actually created the VersaBraille, I think it was called.
You had one of those.
I did.
And we produced a device called the MicroBraille, a portable battery-operated device, fairly large. Well, in that time, it was small and lightweight, but by modern standards, it was a heavy thing. And fraught with a lot of issues, new technology like that, and that was fairly revolutionary. It was originally created by a French nuclear physicist, Oleg Tretyakov. And he took a phono cartridge element, basically. It's a piezoelectric reed, so to speak, about 3 inches long. And that was used in phono pickup cartridges. And he took advantage of the piezoelectric properties of that device. When you applied about 200 volts to it, DC, it would deflect in the center enough to raise a plastic pin. And you could reverse the polarity, it would pull it downward. And so by creating a very tight little device, you could make a paperless Braille cell. And I shouldn't tell you this, but effectively he showed it to Triformation and he showed it to Telesensory, and Telesensory declined to take it. We actually bought the design and licensed it. Telesensory, well, they're gone now, so I can say this. They stole it and took it to someone else who said, well, you need to do this, you need to do that and make it better. And they did. And that's where the VersaBraille product came from. But that's kind of where paperless technology started.
That VersaBraille product was interesting. I actually had one of those. At the time, it cost about $8,000. It was a portable device, but as large as a very large cassette player. It had a cassette as a backup memory, so it didn't have solid-state memory like devices do today. You just copied stuff onto tape, and that was your memory. It had 20 cells, and you know, it wasn't really functional, but it was enough to make me be able to do things that I needed to do. I was able to use a 300 baud modem from home at the time and write programs from home that I needed to do for work.
So by contrast to today's capabilities, you'd never even consider going near the thing, but at the time, it was enabling.
Absolutely.
That was in the mid-70s?
No, that was the early 80s. In the mid-70s, you really didn't have much in the line of technology. About 1975, the company did a project along with Joe Sullivan of Duxbury Systems. He founded Duxbury about that time, and Joe created really the first computer-based Braille translation system. And by about 1978, Triformation and Duxbury did a joint project with the National Library Service to really revolutionize Braille production. At that time, to do any kind of high-volume Braille, you either did it on a Perkins Brailler, which is a manual Braille typewriter, or they had developed a very crude technology where they had a device where you could use a 6-key Braille keyboard and basically emboss Braille in a metal plate, and then those plates could be mounted on a modified printing press, an ink printing press, without the inking equipment. And you could then do high-volume Braille production at that point, called plate or press Braille.
Yeah, we actually got to see the press Braille press at the National Braille Press. We took a tour there probably 15 years ago, but now, of course, everything's gotten more modern there, too.
Well, if you were there, you probably saw their plate-making machine.
Yep.
That was the result of this project. And between Triformation and Duxbury and the National Library Service, a pilot contract was given to produce 10 books. This was in 1978. And as a result of it, we developed that plate-making device, which is a computer-driven machine where you can send a Braille file to it. It would emboss Braille on metal plates. Joe Sullivan developed the Braille translator. So you would type in print, translate to grade 2 Braille. They used our LED 120 to do a paper-proof copy. You would correct it, make, you know, as you have to do. You make corrections to the Braille. From then, you would send it to the PED 30, the plate-making machine. It would make the plate masters. Then you could mount those on the presses and make, well, today, if you use one of the high-speed presses, you can do over 20,000 Braille pages an hour using that technology. And because it's a plate master, just like with print, you can guarantee every copy is going to be the same. So, you know, you had the quality assurance side of it as well. If you use an embosser, you always have an opportunity for some sort of technical issue, and you may lose dots and things may be different.
All right, so who's going to ask what LED and PED stand for?
LED meant line embossing device. The LED 120 had 80 solenoids that drove 80 pins to make a 40 character Braille. You did one row of dots at a time, and you go whack, 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 and then it would space. And you could tell by the sound, actually, you know, the cadence of the sound. You could hear it, boom, you know, as it would do the Braille. It had a certain sound to it. And they called it the line embossing device. Not very creative. And the PED 30 was the plate embossing device. 30 meant 30 characters per second. And, you know, not very creative. You know, the modern machines, we call them our Romeo, our Juliet, our Phoenix. You know, you have more marketable names for products. But in those days, they were fairly crude because, you know, the companies were just garage operations.
They were
prototypes. I mean, right. Even the what they would call a production machine was a prototype device that was handmade. You know, this industry didn't really become an industry till the early 90s.
Back to the plate embossers. I know Pete still gets one magazine every week in Braille just to keep up his skills, even though audio is more efficient. And it's always printed, as are the books, with the bumps on one side, interdigitated with the dents that come from the bumps on the other side. How do you do that with the plate embossers? I assume you have equipment that does that.
Oh, our primary product line does that. It's called Interpoint Braille, and it's extremely difficult to do, or at least to do well, because you have to be very careful embossing one side that you don't get any snags or any kind of dragging that goes on, because it will interfere with the Braille on that side of the page. And the alignment is extremely precise, because you're dealing here with, if you're following the Library of Congress standard, the dot spacing is 0.09 inches, 90 thousandths of an inch apart.
So that's dot to dot within a cell?
Dot to dot within a six-dot cell, yeah. So you're looking at half of that, you know, vertically and horizontally to place that other dot on the other side of the page. So.
And then what's the diameter of each dot?
Well, on single-sided, our Romeos, we increased it because it makes the Braille much more readable. But you're looking at maybe 20 thousandths of an inch.
Out of the 90,000 center to center.
Out of the 90,000, yes.
Only from side to side, it's 45 thousandths, and
yes.
Then each one is 20 thousandths in diameter?
Yes. So if you're dealing with a cell with four dots and you're putting a dot on the other side between it, you don't have a lot of leeway there. It's very, very, very precise. And if you're off at all, it'll crush the Braille or distort the Braille and make it difficult to read.
You know, you can just sit on it. It does the same thing.
Yeah. Or mail it.
That's how I used to erase my documents.
So you can tell we were pretty impressed by how accurate they need to make the Interpoint Braille. The kids playing in the swimming pool nearby weren't so impressed, but they were having a good time. So
we did gather a small audience watching the interview as we progressed, which was kind of fun.
Yeah, they actually seemed to be interested in what we were talking about. Now for this week's high-tech item, we'll be discussing some of the current products from Enabling Technologies.
Can you just describe some of the most prominent products in a sentence or two?
Long time ago, I remember Mike Romeo developing the Romeo Braille. As people think we are into Shakespeare, actually, Mike Romeo developed the single-sided embosser. It's an excellent machine. 30 years history, and Perkins had one for 25 years. We bought it back about 1 or 2 years ago. It's like number four, and they were still using it. And people constantly at the conferences say, I have had one for 20 years, and it's still working. And then they developed the Juliet. Tony, actually, I remember him being excited about this Interpoint. He thought it was really cool. And the Julia is a fantastic interpoint brailler. And we developed where it can also do the speech and the single sheet and tractor. All our Pro series have the single sheet tractor. And they can be all network and the speech. People think it's only for the blind. Not actually. It makes it simple. It's also very nice when you have it in a school system. And now we have the USB parallel or serial. Well, somebody may go in there with a note taker and change to serial. The next teacher comes in, wonders why it doesn't work with her USB. You turn it on, it will tell you. And then so it's an easy change. I've even heard people said, you know, I thought the speech was irritating. I didn't need it. And then I can't live without it now. The Phoenix is a new embosser. It's the only one out there on the market that can do the standard braille and up to 25 dots per inch graphics. It comes with its own software, and I am not a computer person, and I can figure it out. And it's kind of cool. You can take a JPEG and a BIF and a GIF and PNG file, bring it in. Actually, engineering has figured out that I'm the one to test things, because if somebody's going to break it, it's me.
Oh, you've never seen Pete with a piece of equipment. He can bring anything to its knees. He winds up being a beta tester for everything.
But he can figure it out. But I was able to figure out the software. And you can bring it in, you clean it up, then you can add the lines, you can fill it in with different textures. It's great. And all the upgrades for the software is free. It comes with the Phoenix. The Phoenix has a whole new look. It's 25 pounds. It's lightweight. Where the Juliet, if you want to move it, you know it. It's heavy.
Kate mentioned that many of their printers have speech with them. So just so people understand, it's not that the printer reads the document to you, but the speech is important for changing the various parameters that you want to set up the printer with, like how many characters on a line, how many lines per page, and other parameters.
Well, and just which kind of port is active. She was talking about somebody setting it up to use the serial port, and the next person comes along and wants to use a USB. And so it's nice to have the device telling the user everything that's going on. So we talked with Kate and Tony extensively at happy hour at the hotel, and the next morning we went to the exhibition hall at the AER conference, and they showed us some of the devices that they were demonstrating there.
The Romeo Attaché Pro is actually an older model of our product, but we brought it out now in new classroom-type colors. They're a nice royal blue with silver end panels. We have always had a lot of people tell us they thought our stuff looked too industrial, you know. So, and it does, it lasts a very long time, but we're trying to make it look more appealing for like a classroom setting. And the Romeo Attaché Pro is a personal model. It's only letter size, 8.5 by 11 size paper. It doesn't do full width braille paper, but, you know, it is more for an individual student or people who are only brailing, you know, a few pages at a time, you know, that aren't doing large volumes of braille.
So is that USB connected also?
Yes, that one does USB, serial, and parallel. There's still a lot of third world countries that use a parallel port. And the serial port is on there for compatibility with note takers. You know, a lot of note takers have serial.
They were also displaying a braille labeler that they sell.
And this is not one we manufacture. It's made by KGS Corporation in Japan. And when you mentioned a hotel, it's actually a braille labeler, an electronic braille labeler that will connect to your computer with a USB cable. And it was mainly intended for hotels and places where you had people that don't know anything about braille. It comes with its own software. You just type in whatever it is, room 581, and it bangs out a little clear plastic label in braille that you can stick on a room key or something like
cute.
That.
Oh, that's nice. So it can be used by sighted people to make these signs.
Exactly. Yes, that's what it was for. It was made for people who really knew very little about it. Mm-hmm. And also, though, you know, it is compatible, so a blind person can use it. And it does have a serial port on it as well. And if you have a note taker that can output regular braille in an ASCII format, you actually can directly drive the labeler with your note taker. So it is dual purpose in that regard.
As Tony points out, that can be very useful for hotels, museums, and other public venues like that. That reminds me of an occasion we had to be in the Rochester Zoo, I guess it was, a bunch of years ago. And, you know, they were very good about putting Braille labels near the bathroom, men's room, women's room. And I walked up to one sign, and it was like complete gibberish in Braille. And I thought, geez, maybe they wrote it backwards, upside down, inside out. It was complete nonsense. I just couldn't make any sense of it. And when we got home, I actually made up a little Braille sign on some labeling tape with a slate and stylus that said men's room. And we sent them a little letter along with this piece of labeling tape and described the problem to them. And they were quite grateful.
Yeah, I think we got 3 or 4 thank you notes from them.
Well, maybe they can purchase some of these labelers and get it right in the future.
Yeah, right. You know, often you find Braille in public places and it's just fine, but this zoo story was not the only situation where we've run into completely garbled Braille. So this labeler can be a big help.
But you have to thank all these developers and entrepreneurs through the years for making these devices available and useful for blind folks around the world. We've really come a long way, as Tony has pointed out.
So if you're interested in more information about the Braille embossers that Enabling Technologies makes, here's their contact information.
Can you give us your contact information for anybody who wants to learn more about your products?
Definitely. Our website is terrific. It has video demonstrations, which, don't worry, there's a lot of audio in there that tells you quite a bit. There's a lot of information. It's all accessible. It's www.brailler.com. We have an 800 number to call if you want any information. Talk to a representative, 800-777-3687. My extension for domestics, 204. We sell all over the world, and we have dealers who show and fix all our products all over the world.
And is there a specific extension for international?
Extension 225.
And as usual, if you missed any of that information about the AER organization or information about Enabling Technologies and contact info, telephone numbers, websites, we'll have that in our show notes at www.viewpointsplus.net. And just look for the show archives and the show notes associated with each show.
And now some final words from Tony.
There's been so many different phases of the history of the AT industry in general, and it's been fun, and I just passed my 30th year being involved with it and watching it grow from its infancy, and I've had the pleasure of knowing a lot of wonderful people over those years, many of which are no longer with us. It's been fun to be a part of that because I personally have been directly responsible for developing at least 7 generations of machines. I wrote the firmware for 5 of them at least. I've probably produced 3 machines for the deafblind community over the years, which is a very difficult population to address.
So thanks, Tony and Kate and all the rest of the people who contributed to making these devices available.
That's it for show number 1234. Next week on Viewpoints, we'll be talking with Lynn Leith of the DAISY Consortium and current editor of their newsletter, The DAISY Planet. Lynn was involved with the production of DAISY materials and setting standards for the DAISY format since the inception of this extremely accessible format. We'll learn how DAISY was started and where it might be going in the future. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to contact@viewpointsplus.net or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Viewpoints, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpy and Peter Torpy in partnership with WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.viewpointsplus.net. You can also follow us on Facebook or Twitter at Viewpoints Plus. We hope you'll join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Viewpoints, and have a nice day.